Salvador, this is what original sin is all about. God passing the sins of the parents on to the children. But didn't Jesus come to get rid of all those pendejadas?
Well, yes, that's why I'm praying.
Well, then pray for Chava Boy, said our dad, to get well, not for you to die instead of him. I love you, Lupe, added our father, and the kids need you. Don't pray for shit like that. But what if God has already decided to take Joseph? Then I'd rather go instead of him, said our mother. Lupe, damn it, bellowed our dad. You will not be praying like this in our home. You can't tell me how to pray or not pray, Salvador, here in our home or anywhere else, said our mother. This is between me and God. Then I'll kick God's ass if he listens to you when you pray like this, he yelled. I'm not Adam. I'm not afraid of God or his threats of hell. I'm un mexicano de los buenos, and nobody is leaving, do you hear me? Nobody is getting punished. Shit, we just moved into our new home for God's sake. Salvador, I will not permit you to talk to God like this. Oh, I can't tell you how to pray, but you can tell me how to talk to God, huh? But you talk vulgar, and you talk stupid. God don't punish nobody. That's all just a bunch of bullshit from the church to scare us. And if anyone is gonna be punished, I'll take it. Not you, not Chava Boy, me. Here, chest first. I'm not running out on my familia like that chicken shit Adam who blamed his wife Eva. You hear me, God? I'm talking to you, man to man. A lo macho chingón. It's between you and me. Salvador, you can't be ordering God around. Talk nice. Bullshit. Nice never gets us nowhere, and you know it, especially with God.
Hearing all this, I continued drawing stars as fast as I could, then coloring them. But now I wasn't jumping inside them so they could take me away. No, I could now see very clearly that I needed to stay here on Earth to help mi familia. My parents' shouting continued. My mother was crying, and so was my father. But for some reason, it didn't frighten me anymore. No. Now those little quiet vibrations had once more began humming behind my left ear. I continued drawing stars, and the humming behind my left ear began to spread across the back of my head. Then, suddenly, I felt safe here on Earth, too. I didn't have to go away. Papito Dios was also here with me. This was when I realized what this humming really was. God was massaging the back of my head with his fingertips. I smiled, feeling so good, and just kept drawing stars as fast as I could while my parents kept yelling and arguing downstairs. Later that same night, I went outside after dinner so I could be alone and look up at the stars in the heavens. I just didn't want to hear my parents arguing anymore. Hell, I agreed with my father. No one from our familia was going to be taken away or punished. But if someone had to be taken away, then I'd be the one to be taken and punished. After all, it only made sense. My brother was smart and was needed here. And my father and mother, they were our parents, and so they were both needed too. But me, I was stupid, so I wasn't needed. Hell, every day at school I was getting stupider. Now most of the new third graders could also read better than me. I was going to flunk the third grade again. I began to cry. The way I saw it, I was probably going to be kept in the third grade for the rest of my life. I'd be old and have all white hair and no teeth and still be in the third grade. And the kids, they kept telling me that this was because I was a Mexican. And Mexicans were only good for washing dishes or working in the fields like stupid animals. As I was standing by myself in the front patio and looking up at the stars, something real strange happened. Suddenly, this little goldfish leaped out of the water in the fountain beside me, and I swear that he smiled at me. I laughed, wiping the tears out of my eyes. Now I remembered that when I'd been little and my Mama Grande had rocked me to sleep by the water fountain at our home in Carlsbad, I'd also seen goldfish smile at me.
How are you doing, mijito?
asked my father. He'd just come outside and joined me in the front patio.
Good, Papa, I said, lying.
The tears were still running down my face. He was smoking his cigar. My mother was inside, praying at her little altar to the Virgin Mary in the hallway outside our parents' bedroom. My little sister Linda was praying with her. I felt sorry for my little sister. I sure as hell didn't like it when my mother caught me and had me kneel down with her and do all that praying to her candles and altar. Carefully, my father turned his big cigar about in his mouth as he continued smoking. I kept looking down at the fish in our fountain in the front patio. I wondered if fish ever slept, or did they just keep swimming around and around all day and night?
Do fish ever sleep, Papa? I asked.
Do what?
Do fish ever sleep? And if they do they lie down at the bottom of the fountain to sleep?
Hell, I don't know, said my dad. I guess they do. Why wouldn't they sleep?
That's what I was thinking, and I bet that they dream too. But at school they tell us that only humans are evolved enough to dream or think.
And saying this, I don't know why, but my eyes again filled with tears. What is it, mijito?
Oh, I don't know, I said,
realizing that my parents had so much to worry about with my brother Joseph that I didn't want to add to their worries. No, I had to be strong and keep still.
I'm okay.
Is it school? I nodded. What is it?
Well, the kids, they laugh at me, Papa. And the teacher does, too. You see, the other day, I told them that animals dream, and that they know how to think, too. Because, Papa, you and I have both seen our horses jerk in their sleep. And also, I've seen them think and figure things out, like how to open gates and get into the grain room. I've also seen dogs toss in their sleep and whimper like they're having bad dreams.
The tears wouldn't stop.
They just kept laughing at me, Papa,
I added.
Especially when I told them, as you've told me, that there are some horses that are so smart that they can outthink most humans.
I didn't say what this one kid had said. Sure, your horses can outthink you Mexicans, because you're all so stupid, you flunked the third grade. So school still isn't going so good for you, eh? Asked my father.
No, Papa,
I said, wiping my tears.
I'm not learning to read any better than last year.
He put both of his hands in his front pockets and rocked back and forth on the balls of his boots. My father's boots were beautiful. He always had to have them custom made or had to have a zipper put in on one side because his arch was so high that he couldn't slip his foot into a regular size slip-on cowboy boot.
I don't know what to tell you, mijito, he said, still smoking. I don't know how to read so good myself.
Papa, I said, did you used to sometimes come home from the pool hall in Carlsbad so drunk that you were stumbling and yelling, and Mama got so scared that she'd take me and Joseph and Tencha to hide out by the clothesline?
Who told you that one?
No one. I remember it. The white sheets would flap in the wind like great big birds trying to fly.
I don't know, said my dad. But it could be, I guess, true. Some nights it got really bad in the pool hall. A liquor store is a much better business. Here the people buy their liquor and go home to drink and pick their fights. They don't all try to take their shit out on the bartender.
Why do you sell liquor if it's so bad? I asked. Maybe this is why Mama thinks that God is punishing you two.
My dad took a big breath.
God isn't punishing anybody, he said to me. It's us, humans, who punish each other left and right and have screwed up this whole wonderful world of ours. Take us, the people, off this planeta, mijito, and the whole world has not one problema. Nothing wrong with liquor, he added. It's here in each man's heart, what he brings to his drink that turns everything into something terrible. Remember the old Mexican saying, in the first half of the bottle we find God, then in the second half is where we find the devil.
Oh, I said, then we should throw out all the bottles after you drink the first half.
My father laughed. No, it just means that too much of anything is never a good thing. So, yes, that was probably me coming home drunk after a terrible night of breaking up fights. You see, there was no law in the barrio except me. So every son of a bitch who had an argument with his wife or boss would come and try to take it out on me. Being a cop, especially without a badge or the jailhouse to back you, is hell. No wonder Archie sold me the place so damn cheap. He was tired. And after 10 years, with no days off, I began to get ugly too. Your mother was probably right to get you kids and run and hide. Hell, it must have been like the whole damn revolution for her all over again.
Why didn't you just quit? I asked.
Because, mijito, a married man with children never quits his job. No matter what, a married man with children bites the bullet and just keeps going day in and day out to work. These are the real heroes of life, men who bring home the bacon. Do you know what it means to be a burro macho?
No, I don't, I said.
Well, then listen, and listen closely, because this might just be the most important thing you'll ever learn about becoming a man.
I'm listening.
You see, back in the old days, all supplies were transported by horses with wagons in the valley and by a string of burros up in the mountains. And back then, one day's travel was about 20 to 25 miles, the same distance as the padres built the missions here in California. And a burro macho means that when the burro driver comes to his regular watering place at the end of a long day, and he finds no water or food, his burro machos don't break down. No, these fine, strong animals just pull in their guts and go right on to the next water hole, another 20 or 25 miles, without arching their back or trying to dump their load. You see, the other animals, who aren't burro machos, don't want to go on, so they arch their backs and try to dump their load, or worse, they start twisting and make welts on their backs, preferring to get sick and break down than go on. It's no accident when a workman breaks his leg or his shovel on the job. Accidents happen when a man doesn't have the tenates to pull in his guts and go on with the heart of a burro macho. You see, over and over, I've seen men at the end of a tough job get tired, start complaining, get impatient and break their leg or shovel because they'd quit in their hearts, but wanted to pretend in their heads that they're strong and had worked hard to their last. The head is weak, mijito. Always remember this. It is in our hearts that we men are strong. So now, do you see why the highest compliment that any man can give to another workman is to call him a burro macho? A burro macho never quits or breaks down, no matter what.
I nodded. I got it, Papa, I said. Then a man's real power comes from the heart, just as it does for a woman?
Exactly. Now you got it.
All right. I'm glad that I now got it. But still, shouldn't a man be very careful to decide at what he's going to work at so hard? I asked. I mean, couldn't it still be that all those bad things that happened at the pool hall are the things that Mama was talking about, God maybe punishing Joseph instead of you and—
My father exploded, screaming so loud that he scared the pee out of me. I will listen to none of this bullshit, he roared. Chava boy is going to be all right. We don't need God to punish us for nothing. Don't you understand?
We do a damn good enough job of punishing ourselves already. Especially if we're good people like your mother. Hell, the bastards of the world do horrible, monstrous things, then live their whole lives happy, all the way to their old age. It's the saints that suffer. The good people like your mother that got this whole damn thing ass backwards. Ever since we got our asses kicked out of Paraíso. We don't know shit about living life with God anymore, I tell you. My mother, Margarita, nothing but a bag of skinny Indian bones. She didn't let herself get fooled into all this hocus-pocus bullshit of the church. She told us all, ever since I can remember. They came to teach us with a holy book that only talks about life after people lost their way of living in the grace of God. Why, listen to that, she'd say to us. I want to learn from a book that tells us about the millions of years that people lived in the graces of Papito back in the Holy Garden. To listen to anything else is an insult to our immortal souls. God is love, mijito, not revenge, my dad now told me with tears coming to his eyes. You hear me? My mother taught us that God is amor. And Jesus said, forgive them, for they don't know, on the cross, as they were pounding nails into him. Well, I forgive them all, and I forgive myself first of all. And that's how it is. And all the rest is caca de un toro muy viejo y pendejo.
Tears came to my eyes. Then Mama really isn't going to have to leave us and go to heaven instead of Joseph? Hearing this, my father looked at me for a long time. Is this what you've been thinking? He asked.
I nodded, with tears streaming down my face. No, mijito. Your mama isn't going to leave us.
Really?
Really.
Good. Because if anyone has to go, then I want it to be me, Papa. I'm the one who isn't smart.
Oh, my God, said my father, taking me in his arms. So this is why you were crying when I came out here. The things we put into children's heads, damn it. His whole chest expanded against me. You are a very good, brave hombrecito a las todas, he said. I love you con todo mi corazón, mijito, and nobody is leaving. We're all staying here together and working things out. We're a familia, he added. Always remember that. We are una familia, and the familia always finds a way for things to work out. Con el favor de Dios.
And so my father held me close, and I cried and cried, feeling so much better. I'd thought that our mother was going to have to leave us for sure, and I didn't want her going, or my brother either. That night, I dreamed of stars and being up in heaven with Papito Dios. I was flying through the heavens, and when I came to this golden eye, I shot through the eye, and here was my old dog Sam and my two mama grandes. Sam came up and started licking my face, and Doña Guadalupe and Doña Margarita had medicine bags with them, and they walked me through the heavens, teaching me how to pick stars and put them into my own medicine bag. And it was so easy. All I had to do was just walk up and take a star in my hand, any star, and then rub it between my palms until it was as warm as my hands. Then I smelled of it, and if it smelled all sweet to me, I was to put the star into my medicine bag. Soon my whole medicine bag was glowing from all the stars I'd picked. This was so much fun. Each star I'd picked felt so warm and good and full of love, just as mi papa had told me, that Papito Dios was amor.
Chapter 13. My dad was right. Nobody was going to have to leave nuestra familia. My mother's prayers had been answered. My big brother was feeling much better. In fact, he felt so strong that he was back home with us, eating menudo, which a doctor from Mexico City had recommended. And now, after a week of homemade menudo, tripe soup cooked Mexican style, he wanted to go horseback riding. I ran to the stables to get Emilio to saddle up Midnight Duke for my brother.
Joseph had his own horse, a beautiful sorrel red stallion named Blue Eyes, a gorgeous quarter horse that we kept at Jimmy Williams's place over by Escondido. But he never rode Blue Eyes. He always preferred to ride Midnight Duke, who was a gelding. Myself, I saddled up my old mare Caroline, and then my brother and I went riding out of the corrals and down the hill towards the railroad tracks. I was all excited being with my brother, so I suggested that we ride inland, over towards Crouch Street, where I'd recently found a herd of deer. But my brother told me that he wanted to go the other way, down the canyon to the ocean. "I want to ride along the seashore," he said. "I don't know why, but I've been having dreams of riding Duke in the surf. Do you know the best way to get past the marshlands?" he asked. "Yeah, of course," I said. "I do it all the time." "Then lead the way," said my brother. So I turned my old mare Caroline and started down the valley, going through the marshy part of our Rancho Grande on our way to the ocean. I knew every step of these marshes, but I could see that my brother didn't quite know how to maneuver through the little waterways and keep up with me. Also, he just wasn't as quick and agile with his horse as I was with mine. We could now hear the ocean in the distance. We were where the marsh grasses grew so thick that they covered up some of the deep crevices the water had dug into the earth after a hard rain. I wasn't paying too much attention to my brother's progress anymore. No, I was seeing new places where Shep and I could go hunting. Lately, Shep had started teaching me how to hunt ducks. I loved duck hunting with Shep. In fact, we'd gotten so good at hunting ducks that they were now becoming my favorite thing to eat, cooked with fresh oranges and honey, just like they did in a Chinese restaurant. My brother called out to me. "Mundo," he called. "How did you get over there?" I turned around in my saddle and saw my brother had come down the inner side of the last little waterway, which I'd crossed about 50 yards back, and now he couldn't get to the flat where I was. "You can't cross there," I yelled back at him. We were about 40 yards apart. "The water is too muddy and deep. You'll have to go back and cross where I crossed," I continued yelling. "Where is that?" "Way back there," I shouted, pointing. He turned Midnight Duke around and started back up the valley. I didn't turn my horse to go and help him. I was watching the profusion of wildlife down here at the west end of our Rancho Grande. My God, I'd never realized there were all these little fish in these waterways down here, close to the sea. I wondered if the bigger fish came in with the high tide and ate these little fish. "Do I cross here?" shouted my brother. I turned and looked, and I saw that Jose was facing a big clump of thick marsh grass, and so yes, it could be safe to cross. But on the other hand, it could be one of those bottomless breaks that was just all covered up with grasses. "Yes, I think so," I yelled back at him. Then I saw Midnight Duke gather his feet under himself as my brother reined him towards the clump of grass. Instantly, I knew that I was totally wrong, and this was a dangerous place to cross, and Duke knew it too, and so this was why the big black gelding was gathering up his hooves to leap. My big brother didn't seem to realize why the horse was gathering his feet under himself, so I screamed, "No, don't do it there!" But it was too late, and Duke leaped like a great black panther, trying to do what he was being asked to do. My brother, not expecting this terrific leap, was jerked back in the saddle. I saw his whole face go white with pain. He hadn't moved forward to help the horse with his leap, so Duke didn't make it across the overgrown, invisible waterway, and his hind legs went down into the hole of muck and water. My brother was fighting with all his strength to stay in the saddle. The horse was now leaping and lunging, trying to get his hindquarters out of the ditch. The clump of grass was being trashed down into the hole. Finally, with heroic strength, Duke and my brother made it to good, solid ground. All this had taken just seconds, and by this time I'd raced my own horse across the flat and I was at my brother's side. I could see that Joseph's eyes were welling up with tears. He was in so much pain that he couldn't even speak. "I'm sorry," I said. "Oh my God, I'm sorry. I'll get you home." It seemed to take us forever to make it back home. He couldn't run his horse. It hurt him too much. And he didn't want me to run ahead and get help because he didn't know his way around the marshes. I felt like such a damn fool. If only I'd waited for my brother, staying by his side, I'd been a stupid, selfish asshole. As soon as we got home, my brother was put to bed and Dr. Pace was called. When Dr. Pace arrived, he asked my brother what had happened. I told you not to exert yourself, he added. It's not his fault, I said to the doctor. I was the one who knew the trail. It's nobody's fault, said my brother. My horse just got stuck in the marsh and began lunging. It was all I could do to just stay in the saddle, he said, trying to laugh like a real cowboy. Dr. Pace, having been raised on a ranch in Arizona, laughed and continued examining him. If you don't feel the pain subside by morning, he said, we will have to take you back to Scripps. I ran out of the room, feeling terrible, and that night my mother didn't have to ask me to join her at her little altar to pray with her. I knew that it was all my fault that my brother Joseph was hurting. I prayed and prayed that night as I'd never prayed before, but it didn't help. In the morning, my brother Joseph was still in so much pain that they had to rush him to the hospital. And all that day at school, I felt so terrible that it was hard for me to hear anything the teacher was saying. She was a substitute teacher. We were told our regular teacher was sick. It was in the late afternoon when this teacher looked down her sheet and called my name to stand up and read. I didn't hear her. I was so busy drawing stars. Young man, she said to me, coming down the aisle between the seats, I see that you haven't read in some time. I'd like you to now stand up and read for me. I glanced around. Everyone was staring at me. My heart started pounding a million miles an hour. No, I finally said. She looked at me. She was shocked. She was a lot younger than our regular teacher. What did you say to me? Asked the woman teacher. The whole room was silent, wanting to see what I'd say or do next. None of these kids were really my friends. They were all a whole year younger than me. I said no, I said. You said no to me? She said, starting to breathe faster. Yes, I said no to you, I said. Well, we'll see about that, she said, grabbing me by the ear to pull me out of my chair. You will stand up and read when I call on you. Some of the kids started laughing. Others began making catcalls. She was strong and pulled me out of my chair no matter how much I held onto my desk. Then she put my book in my hands. She turned my book to the right page. Read, she commanded. My eyes were crying and all the kids were watching me. I couldn't make heads or tails of all the words on the page that just kept jumping and running all over the place. She slapped me on the head. Pay attention and start reading, she said once again. Still, I couldn't read. And when she went to slap me again, this time, I don't know why, but I'd had enough. So I dropped the book and whirled around and grabbed her hand. Growling like a dog, I bit her as hard as I could. She screamed out in pain. I loved it. And I bolted out of the classroom, running as fast as I could. I was going to get on my bike and pedal home and never come back to school ever again. I'd take my dad's .38 special and my BB gun and get my horse and really run away this time. But I never made it to the bicycle rack, which was under the pepper trees. Before I could, the playground teacher caught me. He was a big man, and he grabbed me, twisted both of my arms behind my back, and marched me to the principal's office. In the office was the substitute teacher holding her hand and telling the principal that I bit her like a rabid animal. I thought she said rabbit and started laughing because I'd bit her a whole lot harder than rabbits can bite. The principal didn't think it was funny, so he and the man who'd brought me held me by my arms as the substitute teacher slapped me again and again, calling me names. My eyes cried and cried, but I swear that I didn't cry inside of me. No, I took my punishment, just like Ramon, and yes, Jesus had done, never saying a word. Getting home that afternoon, I didn't know what to do. I still felt like running away, but another part of me felt like getting my father's .38 special and a couple of sticks of dynamite and going back to school and shooting all the kids who laughed at me, and then blow that damn principal and substitute teacher to smithereens. especially that playground man who'd twisted my arms until I thought he'd broken them. But before I could decide what to do, run away or go to school, my parents told me to get in the car with them, that we were all going to go to downtown Oceanside to see the priest about having some masses said for my brother. Getting to St. Mary's Star of the Sea in downtown Oceanside was really strange. I'd never been inside of a church except on Sundays when it was full of hundreds of people. Going inside, I dipped my fingertips into the holy water at the entrance, made the sign of the cross over myself as I'd been taught to do, and followed my parents down the left side aisle towards the apse. The main aisle at the middle of the church was only for weddings, funerals, or show-offs, I'd always been told. A tall priest was waiting for my parents near a picture of the Holy Virgin. He greeted my mother and father by their first names. Then he suggested that my little sister and I stay out here, and my parents go into the back room to confer with him alone. My mother asked me and my little sister if we'd be all right. We both said yes and sat down in a pew and watched our father and mother disappear into the back of the church along with the priest. The inside of the church was real cool and semi-dark and smelled kind of good in a funny way. Glancing around, I realized this church was really tall and long and beautiful. When we came here to Mass on Sundays, we weren't ever allowed to just look around. No, we had to keep our eyes on the priest at all times and pretend we were really paying attention to all the stuff that he kept saying and saying. It was so boring. This time, glancing around, I could see that the sunlight streaming in through the windows made long golden columns of light across the inside of the church. These columns looked so beautiful. They kind of reminded me of the sunlight that I'd seen coming down through that golden eye that I'd dreamed about when I'd been traveling through the heavens. I sat there with my little sister in our pew, and the silence was so peaceful that suddenly, just like that, I began to feel that humming begin behind my left ear once again. I smiled. Maybe Papito Dios still loved me. Maybe God hadn't left me, even after what I'd done to my brother. Tears came to my eyes. Maybe my dad was right, and God didn't want revenge and to always be punishing us. Maybe Papito really was amor, and the problema was just us, ourselves, since we'd lost the garden, kept punishing and fighting with each other. I glanced at my little sister, Linda, and saw that she'd stretched out on the pew beside me and she'd gone to sleep. I sat there glancing all around at the tall, magnificent church, the beautifully carved beams, the gorgeous stained glass windows, and the humming behind my left ear grew and grew. I wiped the tears from my eyes, and I was now kind of glad that I hadn't gone back to school and killed all those people. After all, a good man always ate what he killed, and I couldn't have cooked up and eaten all those kids and the principal and that substitute teacher. I laughed. This was really funny. I would have had to dig a big hole and make a huge fire to barbecue that many people. I was laughing and glancing around when I suddenly noticed all these stars all over the church, in the wood, the pictures, the glass windows, and even up on the altar on the clothing of Jesus and Mary and Joseph. Stars were everywhere, and they were all smiling. Suddenly, I knew here in my heart that God had forgiven me. "Thank you, Papito," I said, making the sign of the cross over myself. "Thank you very much." I guess that I, too, must have gone to sleep, because when my parents came out and woke my sister and me up, I'd been gone for a long time, laughing and dancing through the heavens with Sam and my two mama grandes. As we left the church, our parents decided that we'd go out for Chinese food. We drove in our car one block west and half a block south, next to the movie theater. Archie and our tia Tota met us at the restaurant. Archie was loud and happy, telling my parents that everything was going to work out, not to worry, that Joseph was going to be fine, that he and George Lopez had gone down to Scripps today and donated blood for him. Hearing this, I could tell that my father and mother felt a lot better, until our tia Tota opened her mouth and said, "This is why I never had any kids. I just can't stand all the suffering that I've seen my sisters go through, first at birth, and then when one of their children dies." "Our son isn't dying," said my dad, coming out of his chair. Salvador, said our mother, grabbing hold of him. She really didn't mean it that way. You know how Carlota just talks.
It's not just talk, said our tía. It's the...
Here, have a shrimp, said Archie, shoving a great big shrimp into our tía's open mouth, shell and all.
Archie,
she yelled, gasping. You know I hate fish.
My father burst out laughing.
Shrimp ain't fish, said Archie. Just eat and shut up.
It tastes awful. Worse than lobster,
yelled our tía.
Have another, said Archie, going to put another shrimp into her open mouth.
Don't be putting things into my mouth, yelled our aunt.
Laughing, feeling much better, my dad now reached across the table to take my rice, which I'd been saving for last.
No,
I screamed at the top of my lungs.
That's my dessert.
Everyone in the restaurant turned to look at us. My dad put my rice back down, looking very sheepish.
I thought you didn't want it, he said.
It's my favorite, I said. That's why I was saving it for last.
This kid is definitely weird, said Archie. I always eat my favorite things first. Eh, honey baby?
He said to our tía Tota, pinching her. When we left the restaurant, it was already dark. We were all very happy. My father couldn't stop laughing.
Did you see how everyone looked at me when he screamed about his rice? He said. I bet that they were saying, look at that dirty old man stealing the food from that little kid.
Yeah, said Archie. This one has been a hellraiser ever since he was born. I'll never forget when he pissed on you, Sal, and he was still in diapers.
This story I'd been hearing for as long as I could remember. It had happened back in the barrio de Carlos Malo, when my dad had been building a doghouse for my dog Sam, and I'd wanted to help, so I took my dad's hammer and started hitting on boards too. My dad couldn't find his hammer, so when he saw me with it across the yard, he called me a cerotito, meaning little turd, and he came across the yard, took the hammer away from me, and playfully whacked me on the butt. I remember very well that I'd gotten mad and come over and grabbed the hammer away from him, calling him a little turd in Spanish too, as best I could. And he said, you don't talk to your father like that. And he really whacked me good this time. The rest of the day I'd stalked my dad, just like our cat stalks a mouse. I'd followed him around all afternoon. And when he finally went inside to take a nap before going to his second shift at the pool hall next door, I sneaked in, climbed up on the coffee table, pulled my diaper down, pissed all over him as he slept, getting my golden stream of urine to go into his open, snoring mouth. When he sat up, coughing and gagging and spitting, I took off out the back door and got under the house with my dog, Sam. And no matter how much my dad yelled at me to come out from under the house so he could whip me, I refused. Finally, he had to go to work, and at the pool hall, he told everyone how I'd pissed on him. I became the hit of the barrio, the only person who'd pissed on Salvador and gotten away with it. Late that night, Uncle Archie had come over all the way from Oceanside just to find out if the story was true. My dad had gone next door and taken me out of bed where I was sleeping with my mother. He brought me back to the pool hall where he put me on top of the bar top to show everyone how I'd pissed on him. I refused, feeling all embarrassed, but my dad had then pulled my pants down, completely exposing me to everyone, so in anger I pissed on him again. My dad went wild, wanting to really hit me good, but Archie pulled my dad off of me, telling him that this was the greatest thing he'd ever seen, because, if the truth be known, there wasn't a man alive who hadn't dreamed of pissing on his old man. That night in the pool hall, my Uncle Archie had hugged me close, laughing and laughing, and gave me a silver dollar that I still have, and told my dad that he'd arrest his ass if he ever heard that he'd laid one hand on me for pissing on him. And now, this night in front of the Chinese restaurant, I saw Uncle Archie take my father in his great big arms and give him a strong abrazo, chest to chest. We've been through so much, amigo, Archie told my dad. Probation, jail, bullets, and we'll get through this one too. Look, I got an idea, added Archie.
Why don't you and Lupe come with me and Carlotta to Las Vegas? We're going to see a few shows and do a little gambling. Hell, you've done all you can. You've seen the priest, paid for some masses for Joseph. You got the blood that you needed from me and George. Come on. You and Lupe need to get out of town and breathe a little. Maybe you're right, said my dad. And we'll take George and his wife Vera, too. Who's paying? Asked Archie. Hell, I'll pay, said my dad. Good God, Archie. All my life, my biggest problem was to get enough money so I could just eat and keep the wolves away. Now Lupe and me got more money than we'll ever need, and good God, I still got problemas. Maybe even the most painful that I've ever had. Joseph, he's such a good, decent young man, a las todas. And he's suffering so much, damn it. My dad had tears running down his face. Yep, said Uncle Archie. We get out of one frying pan of trouble, only to find ourselves in another pan that's even hotter. Our parents were off to Las Vegas less than an hour when my sister Tencha and her girlfriends decided to throw a big party. But they hadn't gotten permission from our parents, so they had to swear everyone to secrecy. My brother Joseph was home once again, looking pretty good after the transfusions of blood he'd received. Our big, handsome cousin Chemo, who was more or less my sister Tencha's age, was visiting. He was our Tia Maria's son, and Tia Maria was the older sister of my mother and Tia Tota. Chemo was a senior in high school and a local football hero. He told my sister Tencha and her girlfriends that if they supplied the girls, he'd supply the guys. My brother Joseph wasn't saying anything. He was just lying down in a lounge chair in the front patio, taking it really easy like he'd been told. When my turn came to be sworn to secrecy, and they asked me to promise to not tell our parents, I said, "Sure, but it will cost you 50 cents each for me to promise."
50 cents each?
Yelled my sister's friend, Virginia. That's blackmail. Where did you learn that?
From Chemo, I said.
You learned blackmail from Chemo? They all asked, glancing at our big, gorgeous cousin.
Yes, I said. He paid me a whole dollar to not tell anyone that I found him in the barn with...
That's enough, said my cousin, laughing and grabbing me. He's only joking.
No, I'm not, I said. Don't you remember? You paid me to not tell anyone that you were in the barn with...
Quickly, he covered my mouth with his hand, grinning at my sister and her girlfriends. They were all looking at him.
So who were you in the barn with?
Asked Joan, another of my sister Tencha's friends. She liked Chemo a lot. You could tell by the way she was always smiling at him.
No one, said Chemo, his face turning red. The kid is just kidding. Get it? Kid kidding.
But no one laughed. They just kept looking at him.
All right, I said, getting his hand off my mouth. Then it will be a dollar each if you don't hurry up and pay me.
Look, said Chemo, taking me aside and whispering. I gave you that damn dollar to keep quiet, but we can't just keep paying for everything we want to do. Blackmail isn't a joke, Mundo. It's terrible, especially when you do it to your own relatives.
But why, Chemo? It sounds pretty good to me. You big old guys want a party, so you get your party, and I want a few dollars so I can buy myself a pint of strawberry ice cream and a new bow and arrow set. My old bow is too weak now that I'm bigger.
Look, we're not going to pay you a cent, said Chemo. And that's that, he added in a strong voice.
We were in the back patio next to the waterfall with the tall ferns and flowers. Birds were singing in the aviary. It was a beautiful day. And my brother Joseph really did look a lot better, but I could also see that he didn't really care about the party one way or the other. It was Chemo and my sister Tencha and her girlfriends who wanted the party. Back then, our local Oceanside High School also took in all the students from Carlsbad, Vista, Bonsall, and San Clemente, so Oceanside was the center for all the teenagers in the whole North County of San Diego. Also, with Chemo being drop-dead handsome and a star football player, Tencha and her girlfriends really wanted him involved in their party. I had them over a barrel.
All right, don't pay, I said. But then I'll just tell Mama and Papa about your party as soon as they get back from Las Vegas.
I'll throw you in the garbage can and ship you out to sea with the rest of our city's garbage, shouted Chemo, getting angry.
Hey, you're not going to throw him in a garbage can, said my sister Tencha, coming over and stepping in front of Chemo.
But Tencha, he shouldn't be trying to get rich off of us.
Why not? I said. It's you guys who are hiding. And Papa always says that where there's fear, there's money to be made.
But not off your own family, insisted Chemo.
All right, I said. Then I'll only charge you 25 cents each, the price of an arrow.
My brother Joseph, who was sitting over to the side, never said a thing. He just kept watching. Finally, a deal was made, and that afternoon, each person who came to the party put a quarter in the little basket that I'd put on a table in the front patio. I quickly told my sister Tencha about the ones who didn't pay, and then she and her girlfriends would either bankroll the person if they wanted them to stay or ask them to leave. I loved it. I was getting rich just like our church in downtown Oceanside with the tall, beautiful ceilings that collected money on Sundays and sold masses during the week. When I saw the blonde arrive, the one who'd been with my cousin Chemo in the barn on the haystack, I acted like I didn't recognize her so I wouldn't embarrass her, and just asked her for her quarter, too.
Is this a house tax? She said sarcastically.
Instantly, I liked the sound of this much better than blackmail, so I said, yes, it's a house tax for the party. She paid and walked across the patio to be with Chemo. I could now see why our cousin was so embarrassed about anyone finding out what they'd been doing in the haystack in the barn. She wasn't that big or strong-looking, and yet when I'd climbed up the ladder and taken a look, I'd seen that she was on top of our poor cousin, and they'd both looked like they were in terrible pain. But still, she'd been able to hold him down and keep riding him like a cowboy rode a bucking bronco. That night at the party, I climbed up into the apricot tree outside of our back patio with my pint of strawberry ice cream. I'd never had a whole pint to myself. All my life, I'd only been allowed to have one scoop at a time. I loved blackmail, taxes, because with my own money, I could buy anything I wanted any time I wanted. And best of all, I was still young and just getting started, so who could tell where I'd be in just a few weeks or even months if I kept my eyes open and learned all I could about taxes. I was up in the apricot tree eating my big pint of carnation strawberry ice cream, my favorite, and keeping watch on the party. I'd collected money for 26 people, and from up here in the tree, I figured I could keep track of anyone new who came into the party so I could collect their money too. The party was just beginning to get kind of good and wild, and I was truly enjoying myself, leaning back on a branch of the tree, eating my ice cream in big, luscious spoonfuls, when I suddenly felt dizzy. I dropped the carton of ice cream, and I fell out of the tree just like the squirrels that Shep got to fall off of the fence posts. The next thing I knew, I was crying and crying, and my sister Tencha was at my side trying to help me. But my cousin Chemo and his blonde girlfriend weren't trying to help me at all. No, they were laughing and saying that I deserved what I'd gotten because I was a greedy little pig. The rage that came out of me, I don't know where it came from, but instantly I stopped crying. I didn't care if my body was broken or not, and screamed, "You will not laugh at me! Do you hear me? You do, and I'll tell on both of you!" I shouted. "You little shit!" yelled Chemo, lunging at me. "We had a deal! I'll break your neck!" The music stopped. My brother Joseph came up. "You won't be breaking anyone's neck, Chemo," he said in a soft, firm tone of voice. "Joseph is right," said Tencha, also coming up alongside my brother Joseph to protect me. "That kind of talk isn't right, and you know it, Chemo. We're family."
"But he gets away with murder," shouted Chemo.
"Not murder," said my brother. "Just a quarter each, and that's a small price to pay so we can have our party in peace."
"That's easy for you to say,"
said Chemo, his whole face and body twisting. Then I saw it. I could smell it coming off of my big, strong cousin. Chemo was scared to death of anyone finding out about him and that blonde on the haystack. I was shocked.
He was so big and brave and strong out on the football field, knocking people left and right when he ran with the ball. And yet here it was fear that I'd been smelling coming off him all day long. I guessed he was deathly afraid of people finding out that a girl had been on top of him instead of him, the rooster, being on top of her.
"Jamo," I whispered to him, "I'll never tell anyone about you being on the bottom."
"What?" said Jamo.
"You know, on the hay when she beat you up."
Hearing this, Jamo started laughing and laughing.
"So that's what you saw?"
"Yeah, but I won't tell anyone that you lost."
"Good," he said. "Thank you, that's great."
The music started once again and everyone went back to the party. My cousin Chemo seemed happy now. I guess he just didn't realize that women were 10 times stronger than men, and so it was okay if they won. I looked down at the ground, saw my crumbled, soggy carton of carnation strawberry ice cream, and realized it was all gone. All this work to get a pint of ice cream, and I'd still ended up with probably no more than a scoop. I was scared. We were going too fast. It was the day after the party, and I was with Chemo and my sister Tencha. We were in Joan's parents' car. They were all three up in the front seat, and I was in the back. Chemo was driving, and we'd gone up California Street and turned right. We were barreling down the hill on a curvy dirt road leading to the Duck Lagoon between Oceanside and Carlsbad. They were laughing and having a grand time.
"Slow down," I said. "You're going too fast."
"Shut up, you little twerp," shouted Chemo back at me. "I know how to drive."
Normally, I didn't get scared when someone drove fast. In fact, I liked it and thought it was fun. But this time, it was different, and I just knew that something terrible was going to happen to us if I couldn't get our cousin Chemo to slow down.
"Chemo," I said, "please, I'm not joking. You got to slow down."
"Shove it,"
he said, giving the car even more gas. Then I saw it in a flash. A great big old red truck was coming up the road from the bottom of the hill with a huge load of lumber, taking up most of the steep little road.
"Okay, Chemo," I yelled. "This is your last chance. I swear, if you don't obey me and slow down right now, then I'm going to open my door and jump out and you can all get killed by yourselves around the next corner, hitting a big red truck."
"Sounds good to me," said Chemo, laughing. "Jump! I don't see any truck, red, green, or purple," he said, refusing to slow down.
Now what could I do? I'd opened my big mouth and he'd taken my bluff. In my mind's eye, I could see the big truck changing gears and coming up the hill so clearly inside of my head. The man driving the truck had on a beat-up old cowboy hat, and he was trying to light a cigarette as he drove. And when he looked up, I recognized him. It was Bert Lawrence, the man who shoed our horses for us, and Bert, a big, handsome man, was married to Jackie, the most beautiful woman in all of Oceanside, next to my mother Lupe and George Lopez's wife Vera. I got hold of the door handle, and when I felt Jamo slow down a little bit as he took the next curve, I opened the door and jumped. The dirt road came rushing up into my face with lightning speed, and I hit the stone-hard gravel road with a scream of pain and went rolling into a ditch full of rocks on the side of the road. Tencha screamed. Chemo braked. The red truck swerved. Tencha's girlfriend was in wild hysterics, and her parents' car barely missed the big red truck. All this I saw happen like in a slow dream as I hit the dirt and felt my face and right shoulder get cut to pieces on the gravel. My head snapped back against one of the rocks in the ditch, and I was gone. I wasn't here anymore. I was dead. Stars were all about me, beautiful stars. Then I realized that I wasn't just dead. I was also outside of my body, about 12 feet up in the air. I'd seen my own body go rolling off the road and my head snap against a rock. From above, I now watched my sister Tencha leap out of the car as Chemo came to a quick tire-skidding stop, gravel spraying everywhere. She was screaming and calling for me, her Shrimpito. Tencha was the only one who ever called me Shrimpito.
"Please, Lord God,"
she screamed as she came back up the steep brown gravel road.
"Don't let him die!"
I was really enjoying watching everything from up there. I'd never realized that roads and streets looked so smooth and wide from above.
"I'll kill the little shit if he isn't dead," Chema was shouting as he got out of the car, all red-faced with rage.
"No, you won't,"
shouted Tencha at Chemo.
"He was right, Chemo. You were going too fast. We would have all gotten killed by that truck if he hadn't jumped out and caused you to brake."
"That's a lie. I know how to drive."
"But how did he know about the red truck?"
asked Tencha's girlfriend, Joan. Hearing this girl's question, I then saw it so clearly. Even when I'd been alive, I hadn't just been in the back seat of the car as we'd been speeding down the curvy gravel road. No, I'd also already been outside of my body, up above, seeing myself down below and everything else, just like I was now doing. I laughed and watched my sister Tencha and Chemo and Joan come running up the steep hill, but to me it looked like they were going in slow motion. Then they went down into the ditch where my dead body lay still against the rocks.
"Shrimpito!"
Tencha yelled.
"Oh my God!" shouted Chemo. "The damn fool! I thought he was joking! No one is really stupid enough to jump out of a speeding car!"
I could now see that Chemo loved me too. He was just all confused and scared.
"Is he dead?"
asked Joan. Hearing Joan's question, I suddenly realized that this was my decision. I could go either way. I could be dead or I could be alive. Living or dying was really all up to us. I took a deep breath. I didn't know which way to go. A part of me really liked being dead and way up here above everyone and everything. But also, I could see how much my death was hurting my sister Tencha, who loved me so much. "I want to live," I finally said to my other self, and saying this, I was instantly back in my body. I was in awful pain and I was crying.
"Oh, my Shrimpito,"
said my sister Tencha to me.
"Are you okay?"
"I don't know," I said, still crying. "My arm's all twisted and feels broken."
"Good, I hope it is," yelled Chemo.
He looked so upset that I thought he might cry, but he didn't. And instead, he just kept on yelling,
"You damn fool! I really didn't mean for you to jump when I said jump!"
"Stop that!" shouted Tencha. "I don't know what's going on between you and my little brother, Chemo, but you stop it!"
"Thank God he's alive," said Joan.
"Come on, Shrimpito. Let's get you into the car so we can go home,"
said my sister Tencha, helping me to my feet.
"No, I'm walking home,"
I said, once my sister had me on my feet.
"I don't want to get killed again."
"You're not going to get killed," said my sister. "Chemo is going to drive real slow from now on, aren't you, Chemo?"
I turned and looked at my cousin. He was still angry.
"No,"
he said.
"I'm driving like I normally do. I'm not going to let a little kid boss me around."
"Look," I said, "you guys do what you want. I'll just walk home."
But when I turned, I realized that I didn't know which way to go. My head was throbbing with fire, and I was all confused. As I closed my eyes, it started coming back to me, and I realized that I could go back up the hill towards California Street to go home, or down the hill towards Vista Way and go along the lagoon. Either way, I'd get home. But when I tried to move, I couldn't get my legs to work.
"Look at you. You can't even walk,"
said my sister.
"Yes, I can,"
I said. But my knees wouldn't work going uphill. I guess they'd hit the rocks too. I turned and started down the hill towards Vista Way.